Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 342. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about rugged mountains, remote markets, and border guards as we go to the Central Asian country of Tajikistan. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. It's been an odd week on airplanes. An article came out in Travel and Leisure that said someone in Australia may be getting a last laugh over airlines' lofty baggage fees. After a recent Qantas flight from Brisbane to Melbourne, cargo handlers got a wacky surprise when unloading the plane. A live crocodile had gotten loose among the luggage. It turns out in Australia that reptiles, lizards, and snakes are allowed to travel in cargo, but I suspect not in first class. And then speaking of things that weren't classy, there are two bizarre stories that came out within a week of each other about flight attendants not getting along. The first story comes from a flight from New York to Washington, an American Eagle flight, that was delayed for 4 hours because of flight attendants who couldn't get along with one another. Apparently, one of them was on her phone while the other one was trying to tell people to turn off their phones, and made the announcement everybody needs to put their phones away and electronics and so on, including the flight attendant. That did not go over well, and they eventually refused to work with one another, and all the passengers were delayed 4 hours waiting for another flight attendant. Two United flight attendants on a Chicago-bound flight from Raleigh-Durham decided to fight on the plane, so much so that the pilot actually needed to turn the plane around and be met with law enforcement agencies. I don't know what's in the water, but it's been a tough week to fly. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome back to the show Michael Sanchina, who has come to talk to us about Tajikistan. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Chris.
And I say welcome back to the show. Michael has been on the show three times, and we've actually done four interviews. We've done shows on Hiroshima, Taiwan, Kazakhstan, and then we actually did this show already once, but because of sound problems, I wasn't able to release that episode, or I chose not to release that episode as it was too hard to listen to. But Michael, I thank you for taking the time to come back and talking again about Tajikistan.
Not a problem, Chris.
Now, Tajikistan is, again, one of those places that I'm not sure that we can all find on a map. Where is it?
Well, it's kind of smack dab between Pakistan, Afghanistan, Uzbekistan, and Kyrgyzstan. So it's surrounded by Stan.
Okay. In Central Asia?
Yes, in Central Asia. And unlike the other republics, Tajikistan is mostly mountainous. So a lot of its influences, a lot of its culture, a lot of its history is very Persian, while the other stands seem to have more of a Mongolian or nomadic culture associated to them. So that makes the people there and the culture and the experiences very interesting and unique to that region.
And for people with an older map, you'd look in the Soviet Union, because this is one of those former Soviet states.
So if you can speak Russian and you can speak Farsi, you'll get around in this area very well. If you speak English like me, you have a hell of a time.
And what I heard from someone who's been to Tajikistan, which may have been you, was that Tajikistan, that the name literally comes from people who speak Farsi?
Well, it's Russian, right? So Stan means the place of.
Right.
So Kazakhstan is the place of the Kazakhs. Kyrgyzstan is the place of the Kyrgyz. So Tajikistan is the place of the Tajiks. Anytime you see Stan at the end of a country, it just means the place of, and that's the Russian.
But Tajik, the source of that was?
the Russians, what they did is they took the majority population of each of the stands and they named the country after that.
And why did you go to Tajikistan?
Actually, it was very much by accident. I had planned to be in Kyrgyzstan for 2 months doing an internship with a sustainable tour group. And then I thought to myself, I'm in Central Asia. I'm already in a part of the world where nobody really goes or has explored very thoroughly. So maybe I should extend my stay there. And I met some Israeli tourists and they're like, listen, we're all going to Tajikistan. Why don't you come with us? So the embassy was in the capital of Bishkek of Kyrgyzstan, and I got a visa and I went. I had not done any research about the place, and it ended up being a great adventure.
And what would you recommend as an itinerary for Tajikistan?
My advice to anybody going to Tajikistan is not to go by plane. Like, fly in to Dushanbe or fly in to Osh, which is the southernmost city in Kyrgyzstan, and do the route by car, because the plane that goes from anywhere from in Tajikistan to Tajikistan never works. You have to book a week in advance, and a lot of times the planes don't actually get off the ground. So whenever you plan a trip in Tajikistan, plan it by road. And what I would do is start in the Pamirs, which is the mountainous region which borders with Pakistan and Afghanistan, and see some of the key valleys. There's 5 valleys in the Pamir region, and the 2 most famous are the Bartang and the Wakam.
I want to get back here a little bit for a second to the planes not getting off the ground. It because of weather or because they're really that in such poor shape?
Well, I once saw like a very funny comic about the planes in Tajikistan where even the stewardess didn't want to get on. Because my understanding is that they're just very old. There's a lot of mechanical problems. The bureaucracy that runs the scheduling of the actual planes doesn't work very well. So the guy in charge of getting the plane off the ground isn't organizing it very well. And because of that, it's not reliable. It's this old Soviet bureaucracy playing again into causing people trouble.
So drive.
Okay. Yeah, so drive. It takes a long time, but the scenery is always breathtaking. Like, my favorite times in Tajikistan was driving through the Pamir Highway and was driving from the capital of the Pamirs, Korog, to Dushanbe, especially because you hit the border of Afghanistan in 2 very different places. And the side of Afghanistan you see in the Pamirs and the side of Afghanistan you see while going to Dushanbe are very, very different. And just to see that contrast between the countries, just to have that kind of cultural experience is very, very interesting.
And can you elaborate on that? Very, very different in what way?
Well, it was very strange because in the Pamirs, Afghans, as we know or as we see on the news or as we've seen in documentaries, they're Tajiks. Mm-hmm. They're Tajiks who live in Afghanistan. So you don't see burqas. You don't see kind of traditional dress that we've been taught is worn in Afghanistan. But when you're going from Korog to Dushanbe, you start to see the teal burqas. You start to see men in more formal dress. You see donkey carts and you see kind of mud houses. And you see kind of things that you have seen on the news and you have some context for, whether that's good or bad, or maybe I just don't know enough about Afghanistan and that was the context I had. I'm not sure, but I was very surprised just to see the women in the burqas and the men in kind of a more traditional garb. They literally told us not to get out of the car because all you had to do was cross a river and you'd be in Afghanistan. And they said, well, you don't have a visa and if the police find you, you're in trouble. But it's also the culture is different than the Tajiks. And because of that, you might not know what to expect.
And you say the culture is different from the Tajiks. Tell us a little bit about the Tajik culture.
Well, okay, Tajik culture, I'm generalizing. Generally, people in Dushanbe and on the plains is what you call it, are a different type of Islam than the people in the Pamirs. Mm-hmm. The people in the Pamirs are Ismaili. So they're a sect of, I want to say Sunni Islam, but I could be wrong. So if I am wrong, please somebody correct me. That follows the Aga Khan. So he's a religious leader whose royalty passes down through the generations of his lineage. And he's the descendant of one of Muhammad's sons that other Islamic sects don't really believe in. And because of this, it's kind of evolved into a very unique form of Islam. And the largest population of Ismailis live in the Pamirs. So they follow a certain type of Islam. Well, the people in the plains are kind of more traditional in many senses.
Okay.
And the other interesting thing about the Pamirs is that people who live in the Wakam Valley and the Bartang Valley live in very interesting houses called Pamiri houses. And the houses are generally rectangular and they're layered. And depending on where people sit in the house is where your status is within the family. And there's pillars in the house to show the pillars of Islam. And there's a special roof at the top that's usually very decorative. So a lot of people who go to Tajikistan go to the Pamirs to see this particular type of architecture, and it's very interesting, and people are very hospitable in general.
Now, you started at the Kyrgyzstan border.
And what we did is you have to rent a car from Osh, and you try to pack as many people in as possible, because if you're a backpacker like me, you're trying to save money. And then it's about a 12-hour ride to like the midpoint. In between Kyrgyzstan and Korog, which is the capital of the Pamirs in Tajikistan, you should technically do two stops. One is at this lake called Karakol Lake. It's a very high altitude lake. I believe when we did this interview the last time, we spoke about the Pamir Highway and how it's the second highest ground route you can take in the world.
I remember hearing that.
To be honest, it's kind of like beautiful desolation. There's no trees. There's no anything. It's mountains, the road, and the sky. But it's really, really interesting just to see that, because my attention span is very short. And I was very surprised that I was able to be amazed by this type of scenery. And then every once in a while, you get people herding yaks. I had never seen a yak before, like face to face. These things are huge. And to me, it was just amazing to see the different types of people living in this type of environment. And it was interesting to see kind of the way that the etiquette worked. A lot of times you would actually stop for almost every driver coming by and have some kind of conversation with them to find out how the road was ahead and this kind of stuff. So anyways, what we did is we went from Osh to the first stop in Karakol Lake. And there a French NGO had set up a homestay program. So we stayed with this really lovely couple in the mountains for an evening. They cooked for us. They gave us a nice place to sleep. And we wandered around and saw this beautiful turquoise lake in the mountains and took lots of pictures. Then the next day, we went to the next town, which is called Mugab. And Mugab, you don't want to stay in for very long. Mugab is really just a resting point. It was a Soviet science station. The funny thing about Mugab is that half the town gets electricity from, I think, 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. And then the other half gets from 5 p.m. until dawn. So you have to figure out where your guest house is to make sure you have electricity that night. And another very important thing, which might sound funny, is that you better buy all your food, all your water, and all your kind of necessities in Osh or Dushanbe before you leave on this trip, because there's nothing in between, especially if you do the Osh to Korog trip. If you stop in Mugab, there are restaurants, but they run out of food very easily, and the little markets that they have are very expensive. Not because the people are trying to play with you, but because it costs a lot of money to ship the food to that location, and everybody pays for it. Mm-hmm. So a good thing of advice is buy lots of water, because it will help with the altitude sickness, and buy lots of fruit, and buy lots of candy, and buy lots of things that you think you'll need for the next 2 days, because you won't be able to find it around the route.
Okay.
And you'll always find guest houses. We stayed in Karakol Lake area, like I said, with a very lovely homestay. And then in Mugab, we stayed with an English teacher, and he gave us a history lesson that night. So he wasn't in the Lonely Planet. He wasn't in anything. The Lonely Planet guest houses tend to be a little bit expensive. So if you have the money, then I advise you stay there, because everybody needs business.
And how did you find them?
Well, the driver didn't want to go. So we basically just said, like, no, and wouldn't get out of the car. So he drove us to the next place, and we said no, and then he kicked us out. So we just wandered around town, kind of negotiating, trying to find a place to sleep. The town is tiny. There's no way you're not going to find something. Literally, to get around only takes about 40 minutes.
Okay, so
we literally knocked on doors. If something looked like a house, we would knock on the door. And if they looked at us crazy and closed the door, we went to the next house. Finally, the English teacher showed up and he invited us in.
Now, you don't speak Russian or Farsi.
I spoke 5 words of Russian, which basically is like, thank you. I want to eat. Can I sleep? I once told a policeman to eat my passport because I didn't know what else to tell him. That's the only Russian I knew.
I hope that ended better than I'm imagining here.
Well, yeah, it did. He thought I was crazy and he walked away. I basically told him, good boy, eat my passport, please. And he looked at me for 5 seconds and then walked away backwards. So it worked very well. But they're getting more and more used to tourists in the Pamirs. And it's not guys in cars. There's a lot of bicyclists doing this route for some reason, especially a lot of Europeans. So people are expecting tourists more and more. So when they see you, you play the price gate. It doesn't take much to write down or play with a calculator to come to an understanding. I mean, the sign for toilet, the sign for sleep, and the sign for eat with your hands is the same in everywhere you go in the world. Just don't give them the thumb up or something like this, because in Turkish that means different things. So they might misunderstand, but generally everything is okay, even if people don't speak the language.
Okay, you say the universal sign for sleep and eat.
Yeah.
I don't know a hand signal for toilet, and I'm not sure if I should ask.
Well, I just kind of crouched a little bit and like held my crouch, and usually they understood what I want.
Got it.
And this trip is not for those who need luxury. Yeah. Usually your toilet was outside in the cold. And it's also very hard if you're a vegetarian, because a lot of the foods that you're eating contain some kind of meat. Mm-hmm. And it's a sign of pride to have meat. So if you don't want it, it's very hard for them to understand why you don't want it. Like, you should be honored to have this.
Sure, that would be somebody who's more successful can afford meat. Yeah.
And the biggest problem I saw, and there's a lot of animosity gaining now with more and more tourists. People are starting to, I think, get frustrated. And I don't know. Personally, I believe that if you know that a country is not able to cater to your eating style, you have to be a little bit lenient with them. And I noticed even the travelers I was with would get very angry when meat showed up in their food. And you can't do this here. Like, you have to be very open-minded. They already don't have that much choice for themselves, let alone accommodating to your dietary wants. If you're allergic to something, that's different. Like, I'm allergic to nuts, and I had like it written in Farsi and Russian and in a bunch of, I have a booklet with a bunch of different languages, and they'll understand that. But if it's something like vegetarianism, please, you have to be very lenient about it.
Okay. A couple of things. One is, you mentioned doing this as a bike tour, and if anybody's interested in that, the very first episode we did on Central Asia in Amateur Traveler was a bike tour, so you can go back and listen to that episode. Two, I did look up, and you're right, 95% of the population is Sunni. Three, the other thing that surprised me is the literacy rate in Tajikistan. I mean, I think of Tajikistan as not the wealthiest of countries, is 99.5%.
Well, that may or may not be true, depending on how much the government inflates things. But I would believe it, because there's a lot of imams and a lot of religious institutions all over the country. And children tend to go there before they go to school, or if there is no school. Mm-hmm. And there they will learn to read. So it makes a lot of sense that that literacy rate would be so high.
And did you have more to talk about with your itinerary?
Yes. So once you get out of Mugab, like I said, make sure you bring everything you need, because there's no restaurants, there's not much food. But you can get it at the guest houses, of course. Then you'll move on to Korog. And Korog is really where you want to use as your base. And Korog is the capital of the Pamir region. A good thing that I just found out recently is that Tajikistan just removed its visa requirement for Canadians and Americans. So before this, you had to get a special pass called the GBAO. I haven't been to Tajikistan now in 2 years. So what I would advise you to do is, before you enter this region, see if you need that GBAO pass. Because if you don't have it, they won't let you through this. And there are checkpoints along the way.
Okay.
So once you get the Korog is kind of like an oasis in the mountains. The Aga Khan, the religious leader of the Ismailis, poured a lot of money into this place. So it's a very beautiful city to relax in. And here you have lots of options. You can either do homestays, or what seems to be the popular option is this backpacker hostel called the Pamir Inn. And it serves everybody's needs. If you need a really nice room, they have really nice rooms. If you want to argue with the lady and sleep outside with a pillow, she'll lower the price and you can do that. If you just need a little bit of space, she'll do that for you too. And it's really interesting because they started the Pamir Lodge. That's what it's called. I apologize. Not Pamir Inn, Pamir Lodge, to fundraise to build a temple on the premise. And if you talk to the people really nicely, they'll let you go in and see a sermon. Because I had never seen an Ismaili service before.
And you say temple, I assume you mean mosque.
Well, I think she referred to it as a temple, but I guess in this context it would be a mosque. And she let me go in and observe their prayer session, which was really interesting. So I was really interested to know that they had built the lodge for the sole purpose of funding their religious activities. Mm-hmm. And it worked out quite nicely. And from Korog, this is where you'll do all your planning to go to the valleys. And my advice is that there are a couple valleys, but don't go to them all, because they're not used to having tourists in a lot of them. The places that have the best infrastructure are the Wakam Valley and the Bartang Valley. What's so interesting about the Wakam Valley is that this is where you border with Afghanistan. There's a little city there called Ishkashim, and every Saturday they have a big Afghan market. And you can go in and hear Afghani traders come from the neighboring areas to sell all sorts of goods. you might get a little intimidated because the market is in a kind of a barred off area that's literally in between the Tajik and Afghan border, and you have to give the policeman there your passport. There's never been an issue that I know about where you haven't gotten that passport back. So don't feel intimidated. Just follow the rules that they have in place, and it should be a really interesting experience. Unfortunately, when I went, somebody got shot in Afghanistan and there was a holiday, so the market never showed up. But it is the highlight of Ishkashim. And another nice thing about this area is that there is an old ruin called Yanchun Fort. And next to Yanchun Fort is Bibi Fatima Hot Spring. And this is what a lot of people go to the Wakam for, to see this beautiful fort on the mountains and then to go to the natural hot spring. And if you're a man, what they'll tell you is that you go to the hot spring in order to increase your ability to have children. So whenever you go to the hot spring, you'll get hit on the back by a lot of local men, and they'll giggle because you're going to have lots of children after, is their spin on it. In my opinion, Yanchun Fort was one of the nicest things that I saw because I'm afraid of heights. So I really had to push myself to kind of climb into the fort because you have to go down a hill and climb up another hill. And it's a little bit intimidating, but do it. Because when you get to the fort, you can kind of see this 360 panorama of the Tajik, Pakistan, and Afghan borders. And the mountains and the way that the sun sets in this area and the scene of the river, it's tantamount to heaven. Like, we didn't want to get off the fort because just how beautiful the scenery was in this area. You go to Yanchun to see this site, to see the mountains, to see the water, because from that point, it's just breathtaking. And then you go soak in the hot spring a couple other times because it's wonderful too. You can't be bashful because unlike Japan, you don't bring a little cloth with you. And unlike, I think, Europe, you don't wear your trousers. You go in naked. So when in Rome, you must act like the Roman. So be prepared to not be bashful.
Okay.
When you're done there, what you'll do is when you're finished in the Wakam, some people go further to Langar. There's another city about another 2 hours where there's petroglyphs, so old Iron Age carvings. Me and some Israeli friends did this trip. I don't recommend it. A lot of the sites along the way aren't that impressive. It's very difficult to find a car that will take you all the way down there for a reasonable price because not many tourists go all the way down, and the sites aren't worth it. So if you go to the Wakam, go see the Afghan market on the Saturday. Go see Yanchun Fort and go see Bibi Fatima. And unless you've rented a car and done a pre-planned trip to see the entire valley, go back to Korog after you've done that because there's not much to see after.
Okay.
When you're done in Korog, what I advise you to do is go to the next valley, which is the Bartang. And we didn't really know what we got ourselves into with this one because in the Lonely Planet we had read. And as you hear from my Kazakhstan interview, the Lonely Planet really was our best friend on this trip because there's no other publication that publishes maps and information about the area. And the stuff online, because things in the region change so quickly, you can't always trust it. So the Lonely Planet really was a good resource. So we decided, because I was looking at sustainable tour and community-based programs, there is a little town called Jisev in the Bartang, which is supposed to be surrounded by these three beautiful lakes. So we decided to go hiking in this area. We found a driver to take us. It was me, my Israeli friends, and a French couple. And we get to the jump point of the trek. And there's literally this little cable car box, a huge gorge, and nothing else. The French couple see this and they give up. They want to go back to Korog. Essentially, in order to get to the other side of the lake, you have to climb into this little tin box that they built with no bottom and turn a pulley. And this will take you across the gorge in order to start your trip.
Hang on a second. With no bottom.
It's like a metal frame. There's no solid bottom. You have to extend your legs and balance yourself.
Oh, I missed that part.
While you're turning the thing. So we went two by two. One guy would be in charge of turning the crank. One of us would be in charge of making sure the luggage didn't fall through the hole. And you would do this. And it was really strange because on right next to the very sophisticated pulley box system was literally a piece of wood and a pulley thing, and you would have to do it by hand. So that was the only other option. So the box is the better of the two.
Hmm.
Did that make sense?
I think so.
It's well worth it. It looks a little intimidating when you first see this, but it's quite fun to look at the water underneath you as you're going across and to kind of have this adventure. And then once you cross, it's about a two-hour hike to the village of Jisev. And the scenery on this walk is really beautiful. The mountains are very different than the rest of Tajikistan. The flora and fauna is a little bit different as well. And the guest houses in this area are really, really, really nice. The families who run it aren't used to having tourists. I think in an entire year, they had about 50 people visit, which is very, very low. And they're very curious people there because they had never had a Canadian visit. They had never had Israelis at this point. So in a lot of other guest houses we had visited, people kind of served us our food and they left. These people stayed with us. We chatted all night with them. And it really was that genuine experience you want when you travel to meet the locals and have genuine conversation. Nobody's interested in money. They didn't even ask us how much we wanted to pay for the evening. They asked us to give them a donation of sorts. And they fed us very nicely. We sang and danced kind of all night, and it was a really good experience. So I strongly advise that if you're in Korog, to make your way up to Jisev, because the sustainable project there and the families that are running it are very hospitable. And the lakes that we went to go see are very beautiful. They're another group of these turquoise lakes, and you don't really see them in other parts of the country. And then when you come back and you braise the metal box again and pray that you don't lose your luggage with a hole in the floor, it's a little bit harder to get back because now you don't have that hired driver that took you there, right? So this is where our trip kind of became unplanned. We hitchhiked. This huge Jeep shows up, picks us up, and doesn't ask us for any money and just drops us off in the middle of the valleys. And we're walking. And this farmer just kind of like grabs us and tells us, come. And takes us to his house. The one thing you're going to learn about Tajikistan, especially the Pamirs, is that every time is tea time.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Any local that sees you, any family, any farmer, any child will try to bring you home for tea. And this is very nice. But it's only humanly possible to drink so much tea. It becomes a game of not trying to be rude. So a lot of times is what we learn to do is just kind of not acknowledge people. And we just continued on our walk. Because we didn't want to offend them, but we just couldn't drink any more tea. But in the Bartang, this farmer had basically kidnapped us and brought him over to his house for tea and coffee and dinner. And it was really amazing because we didn't expect just to be brought over to somebody's house for a long period of time. We ended up spending the night and we watched old wedding videos in their house for the evening. And it was that kind of perfect experience. And I think there is where we learned what really the people in the Pamir's mentality is, because people there aren't very rich. You said it yourself. The country doesn't really have that much income, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't know what to do because normally when we had visited people's houses, they had asked us for money. Unless it was tea time. Tea time is always free time. But if you wanted to sleep, they would try to barter you. This guy didn't want anything from us. And his son spoke English. He had lived in Moscow for a long time. What you learn is that a lot of Tajik men leave Tajikistan to go to Russia to work.
Mm-hmm.
They'll come back. And his English was pretty good. And what he said to us is, we don't understand. We have so many grapes. We have so much bread. We have so much meat. We have so much things. Enough for our family. Enough for everybody. So why wouldn't we help some travelers? You don't know your way around the Pamirs. You are here to learn about our culture. So why wouldn't we invite you over for dinner? Why wouldn't we invite you over for lunch?
Hmm.
And this is the mentality that you see the entire time you're in the Pamirs. Is people are being hospitable to you because they should be. There's lots of everything to share, and you don't know the land that well, so why wouldn't we help you? And this is what makes it such a great place to visit, is this kind of hospitality without having to feel guilty of enjoying it. Because they genuinely want to share with you. They genuinely want you to have a good time. The only people who I wouldn't trust are the policemen. And that's a rule of thumb for the entire Central Asian region. If a policeman is being really, really nice to you, there's usually a reason. And they never speak any Russian and don't speak any English. And they'll leave you alone because then they can't do anything to you. But generally, people are very, very kind.
Hmm.
And then when you're done in the Bartang, you go back to Korog. And you have to understand that there's nothing really in Korog to see as a tourist. Korog is like a great place to kind of recoup and relax, because there's a lot of hiking involved when you go to the Wakam and the Bartang Valley. So you go to the Pamir Lodge or you go to a guest house and you just relax. That's the best thing to do in Korog. Except there's this really good Indian food restaurant and Indian hotel in the middle of the city. And when you're tired of like mutton and Mantu and all these like Central Asian foods, go there for a good Indian meal and you'll be very, very happy.
And mutton I knew, but mantu I didn't.
Well, mantu are big dumplings that are filled with onions and mutton and covered with sour cream. They're very good. But like I said, you can only eat so much.
Not a lot of variety, yeah.
And I got a haircut in Korog. That's probably my highlight of being in the town. My barber only had one hand because he had injured the other one, and he did a better job than most of the barbers in Canada. So I'll never forget this guy because he did such an amazing job with my hair. And it was fun. Korog people are very nice. Most of the students speak English. There's a lot of NGOs in the town, so they're very used to foreigners. So it is a good place to kind of just get things back, get the supplies you need, kind of sleep a little bit, relax, go out for different types of food, and then continue your journey. I did hear in the news, though, recently that they're having a little bit of problems there. So make sure you read what the situation is and what the warnings are. Mm-hmm. Don't forget you are near hotspots, and that does spill over sometimes, and you don't want to be there when something's going on.
Well, you're just across the river from Afghanistan and Korog also.
It's not just Afghanistan. It's that there's also internal issues within Tajikistan.
Sure. Yeah.
They just finished a 10-year civil war, and some of the warlords, like literally warlords, can cause problems. Or if something happens to a warlord, it can also cause a political problem. So you just have to make sure you know what's happening.
Sure.
And then what you would do is when you're done in Korog, you want to go to Dushanbe. Dushanbe is the capital of Tajikistan. There are no traditional taxis. There are no trains. There are no buses. You're always negotiating with the driver. Whenever you want to go somewhere, you're negotiating with the driver. So just make sure you go to the bazaar and find the right parking lot, because the different parking lots are for different destinations.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
If you're going to the Bartang, you have to find another parking lot in the bazaar. And if you're going to Dushanbe, you have to find another parking lot in the bazaar. And don't be surprised if the prices are a little bit expensive. Petrol in Tajikistan is extremely expensive for the Tajiks. Like the ride from Korog to Dushanbe can cost as much as $70 or $80. Normally it should be about $60, but it just depends on the petrol price because they get it from Russia and Russia charges them a lot of money on it. So don't be too offended. Make sure you find out what the price should be and it will probably be high. And that ride from Korog to Dushanbe is interesting too because it's very narrow roads at very high altitudes that like to wind. So my word of advice for you is don't look down. The entire trip, because I wasn't afraid because my driver seemed like he knew what he was doing and he had done the trek a couple times. But when you look down and you can't see the bottom of the mountain, it's a little bit intimidating. But you'll stop to eat every couple hours because it is more than 10-hour drive to get to Dushanbe.
Okay.
Another important thing to know is that once you get to Dushanbe, your lodging options are limited. You have the Regal Continental, which is $100 a night. And then you have kind of old Soviet hotels. My recommendation to you is stay in the Soviet hotel near the circus. Most Central Asian capital cities will have a circus, and usually around the circus is where you find the good lodging. So Dushanbe is no different. You just have to understand that old Soviet hotels have these horrible cleaning ladies who yell at you for everything and you don't know why. So just ignore them. If you find a really nice one, they're awesome. They'll get you hot water whenever you want it. They'll clean whatever you need. But when you get an evil one who's very grumpy, it's a nightmare. So just give them the keys. Find out what they expect from you. Don't ever leave the hotel with your key because they'll get very angry. Just kind of put up with it because the hotel itself isn't that bad. And for $20 a night, you're not spending so much. But the ladies who run it are quite crabby. So that's the only downside.
Good to know.
Dushanbe itself is not really a touristy town as well. Mm-hmm. The really cool thing about Dushanbe is that they have their own beer gardens because they microbrew their own beer. And the beer is really nice. So if you're a beer drinker, then enjoy it. And it's a city, right? The internet is fast. There's a museum there. It's not so impressive. But if you're really interested in history, I advise to go see it. The lakefront is very beautiful. If you're in Dushanbe, I advise going to the lakefront. From my description, you can tell you don't really need more than 2 or 3 days in the capital. There's not much to do as a tourist. It's a place where you answer your emails because you haven't had access in the mountains, some good food, and move on. We met some Afghanis who were studying in Dushanbe and kind of had a crazy drunken night with them. I don't advise that because a couple people almost got hit by a car, but have fun.
What surprised you about Tajikistan? And what do you feel like you didn't know before you went there?
Everything.
I almost wondered as I asked that question.
Before I went there, I had spent a lot of time researching Kyrgyzstan, and Kazakhstan and Tajikistan ended up being like my favorite places. And I think mainly because I didn't know much and I had no expectations of them. People are ridiculously nice. You hear a lot of bad things about the country because a lot of opium comes out of Afghanistan and goes through the Pamir Highway. They call it the Opium Highway. And you read a lot about civil war and things like this, and you don't see it. You never really feel like you're in danger the entire time you're there, but all the literature makes you feel like you should be. Does that make sense?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Don't let your guard down, but don't feel this feeling of impending doom like the literature makes it feel like you should. And people were just so nice. Like, I've never experienced people in general the way I experienced them in Tajikistan. They were just so beautiful, and I'll never forget that. Whenever people ask me about Tajikistan, I always say the people are beautiful because it's true. The food is not always so good. It's really nice in Korog that you could find hot dogs. Apparently, the Canadian government ships chicken hot dogs up to Korog, I guess to add to the diversity of the food, or maybe it's in our aid budget, but that was quite a surprise. I didn't expect to find chicken hot dogs. It's an amazing place. The art, the local handicrafts are really interesting. The culture is really interesting.
What kind of local handicrafts?
Well, they make these big woolen socks.
Okay.
Generally the women wear, but they're very decorative. Usually they're the colors of the Tajik flag. So they're red, white, black, and green. And because the weather is so cold there, they keep your feet quite warm. The one thing I should say, though, if you end up in Korog, there is an organization there called PECTA, P-E-C-T-A. And they're the local NGO doing tourism. And they run a handicraft shop, and they supply all the maps, and they do the guides and the drivers. Go talk to these people because they're very down to earth. If you're a backpacker and you don't have money for a big trip, they will tell you how to do it even without their services. They were a great information source for everybody in that town.
And you mentioned the weather a couple times too. What time did you go?
I was there at the end of September, and okay. It was so cold.
Mm-hmm.
On the Pamir Highway, of course, it was quite cold because of where you were at the altitude. But the valleys and Korog and even Dushanbe were not really cold at all, and the rain wasn't really there. So we generally had sun and blue skies the entire trip. If you do want something that surprised me with that border check from Kyrgyzstan to Tajikistan, because it's in the middle of nowhere and those guards are really bored. And they took us into this little room, and this guy was doing a coloring book and another guy was playing a guitar. And we came to the conclusion that they stole all this loot from tourists because they're bored and they can. So if you have like a hat or a cool book or something you don't really want the Tajik border guards to take from you, hide it really well. Smile to them. Be polite. Don't get aggressive if they start taking stuff because you're not in a position to do so. You're on their jurisdiction. But my buddy lost a hat to the Tajik border guards, and I almost lost my camera. So just make sure you hide your things quite well because they're bored and they'll take it for their own amusement.
Okay. Good to know.
They're just young guys and they're stuck up there with not much to do. So it kind of makes sense. I would do the same thing.
Before we get to our last questions, you're standing in the prettiest spot in Tajikistan. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
In the Pamir Mountains in the Wuk Corridor on top of Yanchun Fort, looking over at Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Tajikistan. Just as the sun is setting and the light is reflecting on the river and the sky is turning orange, and you're saying to yourself, I can pass away right now because it doesn't get any better than this.
Excellent. Before we get to our last two questions, any last words of wisdom for anybody going to Tajikistan?
A lot of my friends got sick from the food. So be really careful. Don't eat watermelon because watermelon tends to absorb bacteria a lot better than other foods. Drink only bottled water. And I drank only carbonated water. And the entire time I was in Tajikistan, I never got sick. They say carbonated water is cleaner than non-carbonated. So maybe stick to drinking carbonated water only. And generally all the food is cooked, so you don't really have a problem. The snacks are fried. So just wash your hands and be very careful about what you're eating because people tend to get stomach problems. And the border guards, when you're going through the checkpoints, might try to bribe you. So if you're bringing your passport to them, pretend you don't speak English and pretend you don't speak Russian.
And when you say they might try and bribe you, they might ask you for a bribe.
They'll ask you for money. They'll want. If you start speaking French or you start speaking Italian, I started speaking Japanese and I confused them. and they'll generally let you go. But other than that, no, just enjoy your trip. Don't plan too much, because I think that's kind of the beauty. There's not really sights to see. Just enjoy the ride, talk to the people, and be a guest in a country where they want you to be a guest.
Excellent. Last two questions. Not only have you heard them before, but you've heard them even talking about Tajikistan. You really know you're in Tajikistan when what?
When you're in a Pamiri house, sitting down around a big table, sipping tea, and watching a four-hour-long wedding video.
All right. And if you had to describe Tajikistan in three words, what three words would you use?
Hospitable.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. And you let me get away with this the last time. Tea time.
Excellent. Michael, thanks for coming back on the show yet again, and twice this time, to talk about Tajikistan.
Not a problem, Chris.
And Michael, where can people read more about your travels?
On my Tumblr account and on my WordPress website. I also write articles for a great website called Travel Culture Magazine. I've written to them about Tajikistan, about Kazakhstan, about Japan. So please stop by and look at some of the articles I've written there. And the website in itself is really interesting. And give them a look if you have the time.
Thanks for so much for coming back on the show.
No problem, Chris.
Last week, when we didn't do an episode of The Amateur Traveler, I was in Spain. I was there for the TBEX conference, the Travel Blog Exchange conference. I had the pleasure to meet up with a few people who have been on the show, some of whom I'd never met before. One person that sticks out is Heather from Heather on Her Travels, who now does her own podcast, who started in The Amateur Traveler doing an episode on Valencia. So you might want to check out Heather on Her Travels. Speaking of being on The Amateur Traveler, I also ran into Matt Kepnes. Matt has a very well-known site called Nomadic Matt, and I was pleased and surprised when he said that his first big break was to be on The Amateur Traveler. Matt did a show a long time ago about his travels in Western Australia and has been back on the show a couple times since. If you're curious what a travel blogging conference sounds like, the latest episode of This Week in Travel was recorded as a Saturday morning keynote session at TBEX in Europe. And the interesting story behind that is it wasn't scheduled to be. That was a last-minute addition. We found out the day before that the keynote speaker, Chris Guillebeau, had missed a flight in the Seychelles. And Chris has also been on The Amateur Traveler. If you go back, you can hear about his very first trip, traveling to West Africa. And that was quite a few trips ago, because this year Chris should get to his last five countries that he hasn't visited in the world. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com so others can see it. You can also visit the Facebook community at facebook.com/amateurtraveler. Or follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral.